okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay this man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return. I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. After Molly, Mr. Matt Weber on the board on a pretty nasty weather day. We have Mr. Frank Fahey. Frank, what's it like out by you in Bayou Country?
It's not too bad out here. It's only about 6 inches.
We've got like, I'm not sure we have one or
which
two.
Which sounds like an Irishman bragging, but
yes.
You know.
Yes. Yes.
No, there's not much snow here. Relatively speaking, it's windy as heck.
We got the, I had a feeling we weren't going to get that much last night when it was still 37 degrees about 9 o'clock, but it was windy and the sleet whack in the window was a tough sleep night. Yeah, it was noisy. I mean, it was just windy as hell. And we've got about, if it gets cold, we got an inch of solid slush on the sidewalk that'll be solid ice if we don't get a little more warm weather, a little less, if we don't get another couple hours of over 32 degrees, I think we're screwed here. But no snow.
Yeah, they said a low of 21 tonight.
Well, we better do some slush swiping off their sidewalks and their stairs or elsewhere.
Yeah, that could be trouble.
I'll do the stairs. That's it.
Well, you know,
I had angioplasty over 20 years ago. I'm a little aware, even though I feel very healthy, my doctor says I am. I don't think I should. Our age, neither one of us should be shoveling a slush. Now, if Matty was a mensch,
yeah,
he'd be out here in Elm versus about 8:30.
Well, I got my guys, and my guys have a snowblower as of last year. My neighborhood dudes, so they're. Hey, what do you make of this sell off on Friday, which we never get on Black Friday, and all of a sudden we're bouncing back more than that up today, or what a this is crazy, Frank. I mean, I don't know. You would never guess the Black Friday. Of course, we had the total shellacking of oil, which I think is the wildest trade, this oil this year. We're back down to $50, and we're up today, and we're still at $50. I mean,
it's wild. As I was getting up this morning, a station which will remain nameless said that we were up. The market was up, S&P was up, because oil was up. So I was going to come down. I'm thinking, gosh, it's probably finally had a 5 to 7% move to the upside. It was up 50 cents.
Yeah, it's
it was
up a whole
like,
50
come
cents.
On.
So down
nobody
5
knows bucks. Anything.
Down $5, up 50 cents.
Right.
I'm kind of surprised.
Key reversal.
Well, I've been in the camp like for a while that the actual market price of oil now is somewhere between $52 and $57 a barrel. If you just let everything, if you get the politics out of it, because there's that many producers, and there's like 21 producers now. I mean, it's not like there's one or two. As much as everybody's still genuflexed to the Saudis and the OPEC, Saudis are like 11%. They're like we are. Or actually, we're more. We're like 12. So there's all kinds of people that are in this.
Well, it's Canadian and U.S. fracking supposedly that's knocking it down.
But I mean,
thank you, President T, and the Saudi Arabians.
Well, from what I understand from the mavens, I was having a adult beverage with a few weeks ago. That this is what they do for one of their firms. What's the Texas one? That's not the Bakken. That's the other basin. Bakken is North Dakota. Whatever the Texas basin is, it begins with a P. I don't know. Whatever. But their costs, because of the techniques...
The Permian?
Using, yeah, Permian. They're down to, real low. And they actually, they take like a $5 or $6 hit, basis hit, because they have to rail it out of there. There's no pipeline at all. So they have to put it on rails to get it. And there isn't really a railroad right through there. Because the weird story is, Frank, you know who gets a big chunk of that money? not a big, a big chunk of the lease money, not the total money, but more than you would expect, is a railroad that was given all that property. That was supposed to be the Fort Worth and Western or something like that railroad. They put in like 2 miles of track and gave up the ghost. Maybe it was 5 miles of track, so the hell with it. But they got to keep all the property the government gave them all the way west. And a lot of the basin is on their property. This whole corporation that sold for, you know, 2 cents on the bucks. So it used to be gonna be a railroad, never became a railroad. They get the property and now they're taking the oil out by truck and by rail, and there's not even a railroad there to do it with. So they probably gotta go south to the Southern Pacific. I don't know, there must be something around there. But these guys claim it back when the oil price was like 64, they were getting in the mid-50s, low-50s then, and still making money. So now they're probably actually getting 44, 45 in that area, maybe even less, because of the hassle it is to get it to wherever you got to get, to the Gulf Coast, New Orleans or wherever. I mean, so it's not.
So why aren't we building a pipeline in our own country to take our country's own oil somewhere? Instead, we're building a pipeline from Canada. Who won't allow it to go east or west from their base?
I don't think people think.
Just asking.
I don't know if the engineering of it. I know that we had a the one thing I know something about is. There was a lady who used, when she came to Chicago years and years ago, she came for a nursing convention and she listened to the show out of the blue when we ran the score. And anyway, she continued to listen. I don't know if she does anymore, but we became, she sent a letter in and I sent a letter back, and I've never really met her. But her, she's in somewhere around, where do they play the Little League games? Williamsport?
Yep.
And her husband, had like four other guys, the real man guys, not like Manny Weber kind of guys. They got the deer lodge where they go up and blast deer. So the families have owned this piece of property like forever. And I often wonder when you drive through Pennsylvania, and all you see are like these, you know, forested mountaintops. Who owns all that stuff? And I guess the government owns some and people own some, but I don't know what you do up there. I mean, other than go up there and blast deer, but it's. Anyway, that's what these guys do. So all of a sudden, one day, somebody comes by and says, by the way, there's oil in them there hills, sort of like the Clampets. And they give them a bunch of money. And they say, okay, we want five-year deal. If we don't start, doing the fracking in 5 years, the deal's off and you can sell it to somebody else. So the prices don't move up very much. They had to put a road in there, Frank. The road costs $1.5 million. And the deal is when you're done fracking, you have to replace the road to where it looks like there never was a road, which is even more bizarre. So these guys went in and, like, within a month ago, just to save the claim, they started doing some drilling and some fracking. But all the pipelines they were using were laid on the ground that they paid other people's property to get to wherever they needed to go to a terminal, and I think they were railing it out or trucking it out. But I don't think they think that the fracking is like the North Slope. You know, there's a time to it. So I think the pipelines that they use in some of the areas are actually above ground, and they're flexible, and they're temporary. So I don't know that it's worth putting some big, huge honking pipeline from the Permian down to either Oklahoma or down to the Gulf. I mean, because I haven't heard, like you, I haven't heard boo about it. Or maybe there is one close, and you just train it to the one that's close, because it's got to be, can't be that far from Oklahoma where those guys are. But maybe Cushing, does the pipelines there go two ways or one way? I don't know. I mean, we need a pipeline expert on here one of these days. We need to find somebody. Because it would seem like that would be the one. I agree with you, Frank, but there might be a reason why there isn't, I guess. How's that for a circular
argument? Follow the dollars.
Yeah, how's that for a circular argument? But but every day but one, this is certainly no recommendation, because the one is the one that I decided to do it. Every day but one of like the last 10 or 12 expirations, Frank, you wanted to buy puts on the opening. Now, what up this high this morning, do you want to do that again today? Or is this it? We're off to the Christmas races.
Oh, I have no idea. I'm skeptical. I'm very skeptical. Spoos have not gone down very much. Or not spoos. The VIX future. December VIX futures only up about half a point. that's not particularly bullish on over 1% move to the upside.
No, no, it isn't. And I think people think it's going to kind of be like this for a while. We've got this G20 thing, and is that the second? So it's next week or next weekend?
Yes.
So I don't know how Trump gets himself out of this trick bag with this guy in Saudi Arabia. I mean, or doesn't. I mean, it doesn't seem like he cares, but that's kind of a tough one. I don't know. I mean, that would not be a one I want dropped on my desk. I mean, you do so much trade with these guys, and we seem to be in their pockets for everything, where we don't even let the world know how much they're buying at the auctions and everything. I mean, we're in so tight with those guys that I think, I mean, I certainly don't know the whole depth of it, and I think most people don't think we're into it at all, but we surely are. And, you know, if this guy's going to become some nasty-ass dictator, which it looks like he is, you know, I don't know what...
Well, his excuses were patently absurd.
Oh, yeah.
That it would impact our economy due to the trade we'd lose. I mean, are they going to buy Russian spare parts for their military equipment?
You know, what do you think that is, that's all about? I mean, if we were to sell somebody F-35s, or in the case of the Shah, and Iran F-14s, and all of a sudden we totally cut them off, what do you think happens there? Do they take the part out?
Well, I think in the case of Iran, at a certain point, I believe they started making their own parts with German technology. You know, the Germans never pay attention to these niceties, it seems.
Well, I guess
in the case of the Saudis, what are they going to do? Bring in slave labor, or guest labor, excuse me, to make it? So I think they're locked in. I mean, no penalty at all for killing a U.S. resident, an employee of a U.S. corporation.
I don't.
That's pretty scary.
Oh yeah. Well, I'm just curious as to, as you know, Frank, if there's enough money and the demand, take the drug trade for instance. People will risk their lives to deliver it. Correct. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I just wonder what an F-14. I think it was a lot different. I suspect if there's a pump or something to keep the rudder moving or something like that, I'll bet you could learn to make that yourself, or you could get it done in a machine shop in Iran or someplace. The software, I don't know about that. I mean, where's Fari when you need him? I'm not so sure that you can find somebody to help you with the F-14's radar system or the F-35. I bet you lose your look over the horizon capacity and those kinds of things pretty quickly. I think the thing, you probably could keep it mechanically in the air, is my guess. What do you think? But I don't know if they can do much for you.
And no, I don't think they can. And there's lots of other things. You know, our oil, you know, how much is oil going to go up if the Saudis cut us off?
I don't think the Saudis.
I have no idea, but I think Iran might cover for them.
I don't think the Saudis. Saudis are down to 11%.
Let's talk real politics here.
Well, just the math that I'm mentally doing here for the listeners, if you have market pricing power, it's the definition is really very simple. What it says is if you cut back 10%, and what the definition is, if you cut back 10%, and then that causes the price to go up more than 10%, to where you end up ahead on the deal, then you have serious market pricing power. I mean, if you don't, then you don't. I mean, if you take a look at the corn market or the soybean market, say you're a farmer in Iowa, or Matty just was, and you own 90 of a billion acres, and you're the biggest swinging bleep farmer in Iowa, if you decide the prices of the corn are too low, screw these people, and you don't plant for a year, I'm going to say you take a hit on everything, and if you're the biggest farmer around, I don't think you move the price of corn 10% to 1%, Frank, and that's being generous, probably. So you
for corn, definitely.
So you basically have no pricing power, and all you can do is stamp your feet, and you know your face gets red. But so the Saudis, I think, are the same way. They do 11 million barrels a day. I think if they cut back to 5, which means they're down, say, 50%, 5.5. I think the price of oil goes up, you know, 10% maybe, or 8%. I'm not even sure it stays there for very long. So that's not pricing power anymore, Frank. I mean, they clearly can't cut a million barrels a day and have it go up 20%. Maybe from this level, but that's what's got it down at this level. You know what I'm saying? I don't think they have anywhere near that pricing power that they used to have. And I don't think the people at the OPEC meetings, what's OPEC down to? 20-some percent? And I don't think those guys can agree on anything. So you're right. If you say, okay, we'll just buy Iranian oil tomorrow, and it'll screw the Saudis, I think the Iranians say yes instantly, don't they?
There's no question about it. Or, you know, ask the Saudis to maybe help rebuild Iraq and Afghanistan. There's lots of things he could have put the squeeze on as a penalty.
I think he just is
looking to lift the blockade of Qatar. And I think this stuff spills over because we have the Russians captured two gunboats and a tugboat from the Ukraine. And so I think this, you know, if this, the United States does nothing, I think we only embolden Putin.
I'm going to, boy, I'll lob this one out there on a Monday morning when everybody's supposed to be happy for the holiday. I don't think you're going to find this guy doing anything against dictators. He kind of likes the role.
It's his club.
Well,
yeah, so this is what concerns me more than, I mean, we haven't even touched the report on the climate release on Friday.
Oh, God. Perfect day for it, huh?
So.
Well, what can, just in general, Frank, what can we do about it in terms of if we continue on the role we're going on here, we're using less and less of this stuff. I mean, we're certainly cutting back on the coal and we're doing things, and even Trump can't really stop the momentum. But what do you do with the Indias and China just, you know, spewing stuff out? I mean, or Mexico. I mean, how do you mess with the, you know, okay, we're not going to throw pollution in from this side of the Rio Grande, but we're throwing the other. I mean, China is actually, from what the people that have been here from China and the couple of questions I've had, they've managed to change their climate over there. I mean, to a huge extent. I mean, I don't think the one young lady told me they used to have 6 or 7 rivers in Beijing, and now there's like one or something, or I mean, the rest of them are all dammed up or dried up. Or I mean, they've done massive amounts of change with the idea of the cashmere farmers, the desert is encroaching on Beijing by a couple of miles a year. Some huge, I mean, it's a real story. I mean, I don't know I know 10% of it from people that have come over there that I've talked to, but I don't, does anybody know the entirety of it? They've managed to, just for people for listeners, your climate to some extent is created by your climate, which is a stupid thing to say. What I mean is, if you let people burn down the entire Amazon, and all of a sudden you say, stop it, you're not going to get another Amazon, Frank. Right? It's not going to, it could end up being a desert. Because what's there before on the ground, it's like in the wintertime here. If you have a massive snow cover, guess what? It's going to be colder. So to a certain extent, the weather creates its own weather, right? So if it's not like if all of a sudden the Chinese people got resolved, said, okay, we're not going to do this anymore, all those areas become grasslands again instead of desert. It just doesn't happen, does it? I don't think. Same thing here.
Hey, Tom, I think both you and I have to be careful about saying weather instead of climate.
I suppose.
Otherwise, we sound like our president.
Oh, God. Well, that's... Well, the weird part is, if you look at how the weather works, the climate works, if we go into a lot of global warming, it could actually cause an ice age. Correct? Because if you get
too... I don't know. That's beyond my science.
I think if it gets too warm, you don't get the convection in the Atlantic up into Northern Europe. Because Northern Europe... you don't get that convection, and there's a convection by the South Pole where one side, the heat from one side moves on to the cold to the other side or something. And if all that stops, things actually get colder and not warmer over a long period of time.
Wow.
I mean, there's a huge mix-up to it. All right, so today, we question one, or one question. This is the Christmas rally. Pile on, we end up at your size. That's choice A, Frank. Choice B is sell this rally like a mother. I don't know whatever that means. And C, you just buy oil. I don't know. I mean, this is it's an odd spot. The 10-year yield is back down to 3.06. The Fed was moving stuff off the balance sheet as the market started going down in the last couple of weeks. Guess what? They've added to the balance sheet. So any thought that Powell has been impervious to Trump's insults, should be taken and sat on, because it's not true. If you look at the money supply numbers and the Fed balance sheet numbers. So the Fed was pouring money back in the last few weeks, which I guess they're not impervious as much as they think they are. This guy's got people intimidated. There's no doubt about it, Frank. I think. I mean,
I agree. And, I mean, look at the 180-degree move by Lindsey Graham over the past 6 months.
Yep.
Or since, John McCain died.
Well, you look at the what the Fed is doing, and again, I don't want to talk more about the Fed when Hal Snar comes on, but they are very political, Frank, and they shouldn't be. My huge bitch, to use the wrong term, with the Fed in the last really 100 years is they haven't done their job. They haven't been independent. They've rolled with the flow, and this time they had to pour money in to save the money market funds and so forth because they were inattentive, and then all of a sudden it felt so good they kept it going for 9 years. Now they're starting to get some inflation, even though if you're of the ilk, which most people would normally be, that you look at commodity prices when you look at inflation and you see oil down 20% in 2 weeks, it's hard for you to have this feeling that there's inflation about. But the inflation has changed with the economy. It's become service inflation. It's become medical inflation. It's become that type of inflation. And it affects people in totally different ways. But just because oil is down doesn't mean that the prices of cars are coming down or anything. And the fact is, when oil ran up from 50 to 65, people never thought that was adding to the inflation, right, Frank? So, I mean, the inflation is different. Inflation is in schooling. It's in medical care. Those types of things. And
it's in debt service.
It's in debt service. It's in taxes. It's in all. We had dinner with two of us. They have our birthdays on the same day, Frank. One guy I went to school with. It's a year younger. But actually, we went to where'd I go? Maybe City.
City Winery.
City Winery, and saw the Bodines, Frank. Yeah, were they good?
Oh, they've always been great.
Yeah, they were.
There's only one of the Bodines left.
Actually, I think there's three. The one guy that replaces the guy was messing with one of the kids' sons or something. Some sort.
Oh, yes. I mean, he turned out to be a pederast.
Yeah.
I mean, God.
So the guy that replaced him was some guy from Australia, plays rhythm guitar. God, is he good. Well, I think the bass player.
Yeah, I always loved the Bodines. They're one of my favorites.
So anyway, they were terrific. And one of the guys I was having dinner with, I mean, people look at the taxes in Illinois. There is so much work to be done in Illinois, Frank, that, some places in Illinois have taxes, property taxes, five times other places. And they're not.
You go down to, like, Flossmoor, some of the upscale South Homewood, some of the suburbs in the South part. Oh, your neighborhood, that area. I mean, there's houses that are gorgeous that are $200,000, $175,000, because the taxes are $20,000 a year.
Yep. They just sprinkle it around. Park Forest. This guy said that Park Forest taxes are five times Chicago's on market prices. And Park Forest basically doesn't have a pot to piss in. I mean, if ever is an area that doesn't, they can't pay that tax, it's them. Evergreen Park used to be 65-70% of Chicago. Now they're they're over double. Because nobody can build a house in Evergreen Park. If you build a house at today's market price, you can't pay the taxes. You'll never get the money back. It's impossible to do it. I mean, this is somehow or another, this has got to get equaled out, Frank. I don't know how you can't have one place has a Walmart, so their taxes are here, and the next place doesn't. I mean, this is crazy. I don't know how you fix it, but and I don't know if
part of it is. And they've talked about it. I think it's the funding of the schools. I look at my tax bill Well, now I don't have a tax bill since I'm renting. But I looked at that tax bill, and, you know, 50% of it was education.
And how much of that is it? But like this guy said to me, he goes, when you live in Evergreen Park, you probably had, you know, 10, 12 policemen. Now they probably have, you know, 20. And maybe they're paying pensions on 40 more. You know, SP Futures up 31. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right
now. Hello, more fake stocks and jocks. I'm Tom Holly. Mr. Weber on the board, Mr. Frank Fahey with us. You think Joel survived, or he went for the short sword?
That was a tough one. If you're a Michigan fan, this was when it was all set up to get your first win against Ohio State in a long time, and they got absolutely destroyed in the second half.
Yeah. Did you see, let's just do this first. The guy who rented the plane with the thing saying to fire the guy from Southern Cal?
No, but that doesn't surprise
Unbelievable.
Me.
Unbelievable. I mean, these alumni, I think some of my friends need to, I don't know. I love them, but a couple of them got to get a life at this point. Anyway, S&P futures up 29.75, Dow up 256, NASDAQ up 102. Believe it or not, that's not the high. We actually come down a little bit. We're up to like 33 in the S&Ps. We got rallies all over the place. We got the DAX up 125, 1.2. This comes after day after Thanksgiving, Black Friday, that was down. Not this heavy, but it was down heavy, which is not usual. FTSE up 60.9%, CAC up 48.9%, so even across the board there. Nikkei up 165.7%, Shanghai down 3, call that flat. Hang Seng, we're up 448, 1.7, so they're back to 26,376, back kind of in that, I won't say comfortable range, but the Nikkei still not back to 22,000, maybe they will tomorrow. Oil, this is the big up move, up 84 cents to 51.26. And Brent is a 60.32. We were talking about Brent being $100. Where are we? We're November 26th. I'm going to say October 15th. We were talking about Brent going to $100, and it's surely not there. Natural gas, 4.03. That's down 3 cents, way lower than the 4.48 it was. RBOB, 141. Wow. Heating oil, 190, down from the $2 last week. So the gas prices are getting hammered, as you probably have guessed if you went to the pump. Silver up 8 cents, gold up 220. Copper unchanged. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. As you can imagine, roadways, expressways, tollways, side streets, bridges, everything in the area is moving much slower than normal due to the snowy and wet conditions. Further west, out in Naperville and in those areas, you could see as much as 10 inches of snow. And, you know, middle suburbs, you're looking more like 4 to 6 inches. And in the city, 1 to 2 inches, but it's still coming down a little bit. And there's all kinds of sleet and hopefully not soon to be ice out there. And it's causing all kinds of delays. So give yourself plenty of time. As far as accidents are concerned, there's a bunch on the side streets. But as far as the expressways, we just have one major issue, and that's I-90. Outbound at Arlington Heights Road, there's a crash blocking the right lane out in the northwestern suburbs on I-90. One other issue on the Edens, there's ramp restrictions. There's a car in the ditch on the ramp from westbound Dempster to the inbound Edens, and that's causing delays as people in the suburbs are getting on the Edens. But everything else looking okay on the north side expressways and out west. To the south of us, no issues on the expressways either, but give yourself plenty of time this morning. Take public transportation or work from home. Those would be your best options. Weather today will be snowy this morning, and then it'll taper off, high of just 32. So all of that slush out there will likely freeze tonight, and that could be a problem. So be sure to clear your sidewalk and your steps before that freezes later on this evening. Right now it is snowy and wet downtown and 31, going up to a high of 32. For our Phoenix listeners, they don't deal with any of this. Partly cloudy skies, high of 75. Right now it's mostly clear and 45. In sports last night, Sunday Night Football, big NFC North clash, and it was Minnesota hanging on to beat Green Bay 24-17. The Packers have yet to win a road game this season, Chief. First time since like the 70s that they started out 0-6 on the road. Arizona Cardinals were blown out by the Chargers. They had a 10-0 lead and then gave up 45 straight points. 45-10 was the final in that one.
They're just awful.
Bears, of course, played their game on Thanksgiving. They'll prepare for the New York Giants this coming Sunday. Mitch Trubisky is still day-to-day. We'll know later on in the week. Otherwise, it'll be Chase Daniel for another start. In hockey, the Blackhawks were off, but they made news by trading their former first-round pick, Nick Schmaltz, to the Arizona Coyotes. Nick Schmaltz was a first-round pick, and he's a 22-year-old forward who they considered to be slightly underachieving. They traded him for two former first-round picks who the Coyotes considered to be slightly underachieving, and Dylan Strome and winger Brennan Perlini. So we'll see if any of these guys can sort of revitalize their career in their new spot. NBA basketball, Suns lost to the Pistons 118-107. Bulls were off. They host the Spurs tonight. Coyotes lost to the Flames 6-1. And in college hoops, it was Northwestern blowing out Utah 79-57. Illinois beat Mississippi Valley State 86-67. Chief.
I was watching the football. Do they just not want Philadelphia to be like, 2-14 on the year or something, because they got the most gracious non-call yesterday in that Giants game near the end, because the Giants are terrible. But I don't know if you saw that, Frank. The guy reached out and grabbed the guy's jersey. Eli Manning's throwing a ball to him, and he couldn't get the call. And yet, everywhere else I saw, you do is touch a guy and you get a call these days. Some of these offensive receivers are pushing as much as the defensive guy, and it's like 100-1 offensive versus defensive calls. It seems, isn't it? It's just me.
That's true, but it sounds like the defensive guy got away with it on that one.
Yeah, he did.
That would be the
right
one
out
there.
In the middle of nowhere. Just the two of them there. Which I'm. Whenever I see something like that, I wonder if things are rigged.
The NFC East is a mess too, because with Philadelphia winning, they're now back in it at 5-6. The Redskins and Cowboys are tied for first at 6-5. Redskins, of course, are without their starting quarterback for the rest of the year, and Alex Smith. So everyone
isn't that the Redskin way?
Yeah. Everyone's thinking they're going to fade, and they have been fading. They've lost two in a row. The NFC North, with the Vikings winning last night, they're keeping pace with the Bears. Bears are at 8-3, Vikings 6-4-1. Packers might be out of it now, 4-6-1. And they just can't win on the road. it's you got to steal a few games on the road.
It just seems like they're just a little short. They can't run. They had two times last night that one where they were third and one and fourth and inches, and they couldn't push it ahead. And Rodgers obviously doesn't sneak anymore, but I can't imagine them not just walking up and going up a yard, but they didn't. They ran at the best guy in the other team twice, and he snuffed them both times.
That's right. The Carolina Panthers, who got off to a really good start, they've lost three in a row, and they're now 6-5 in the NFC wildcard race. The Falcons are pretty much out of it. They were 4-4, and they've lost three in a row. Now they're 4-7. They have a ton of talent on that team, and they just can't put it together. Their coach might get fired. And then Seattle is on the other side. They started off slow. The Bears really, took care of them earlier in the year, and now Seattle's won two in a row, and they're 6-5, and they're right back in the wild card race.
That was a good game. They beat yesterday. It was Carolina, right?
On the road. Yes.
On the road.
Right. Yeah.
Now they got like five home games in a row. The scheduling is weird this year.
Seattle is 6-5. They play the Niners at home, the Vikings at home, then at the Niners, then the Chiefs at home, then the Cardinals at home. And that's how they close their season.
So they've got
four out of five home games.
Well, but the Niners are chumps, so they got them twice.
Yeah.
And you got the Cardinals, so they got one decent game left.
They got two. They play the Vikings and then the Chiefs. And those are two good teams. But then they play three pretty much gimme. So if they can steal one of those games, either at home versus the Chiefs or at home versus the Vikings, which is very possible, both of them, then they're looking at 10-6, likely, and they're firmly in the NFC wildcard race.
Yeah, because, who's in their division that's ahead of them? That's not the case.
The Rams.
The Rams, yeah.
Yeah, the Rams are, they're not catching the Rams.
Then there's the San Diego phenomenon, where they're playing great in a soccer stadium and nobody wants them.
Yeah. Their stadium was actually full yesterday, though, even though it's only like 35,000 people or whatever it is. I've seen it where they can't even fill that. But the Chargers are having a good season. They're 8-3, and they're just one game behind Kansas City in the AFC West.
And Rivers is having yesterday he was the highest percentage ever.
Highest percentage ever, and then I think he completed his first 25 passes of the game without an incompletion, and that was a record.
Was he
26
or 27, and they pulled him because they were so far ahead?
Yeah, and they're up 45-10, so they pulled him. I mean, he was just spectacular, and the Cardinals are just horrible. Sorry to our Phoenix listeners.
Well, I mean,
they're well aware.
You look at the Packers, and they just they're just a couple of people short. They don't have any guards. And then the left tackle, when he was in there, was hobbling. And he's probably their best player outside of Rodgers, and he's wandering around. I mean, what's his name, Villanueva or something, and he was out for half the game, and they put the other guy in. The other guy was like putting me in there. I mean, they've got big holes, and they
gave their 34-year-old quarterback, however old he is, like $135 million. So I think they're going to be in trouble for the next several years. They can't pay anyone else.
I wonder how much of that is. How is it? Doesn't seem to bother the Patriots. They always manage to.
Well, they draft really well. They don't pay anybody except for Brady. So even their good players, they
well, they're paying Gronk.
Well, they pay Gronk. And they're not going to pay him the next contract. They basically decided to pay like one guy on defense, Brady and Gronk. And everyone else, you know, unless they can get a very team-friendly deal, they're gone when it's time to pay them. I mean, Hakeem Nicks, who is going to be an all-pro for the Bears this year, the Patriots didn't want to pay him. And he's a great player and a great draft pick for them. And that's just what they do. And then Brady plus takes pay cuts and restructures his deal every
year
or two. Well,
then Nicks is he's the lineman?
Yeah.
But he's been with the Bears for a while.
For like 2 years.
Okay, but I thought he was a young guy. He's not.
Well, he's young compared to you and me, but he was drafted by the Patriots.
Well, I didn't know that.
The Bears didn't draft him.
Well, I thought the draft pick. It shows how much I know. It's a.
Oh, that'd be way too good a draft pick for the Bears.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Akeem Hicks is 29.
The Bears actually do pretty well in later rounds. That's why they seem to like the later. What about the colleges? I don't get that. Is there something that in the water that you don't tackle people anymore? What about that West Virginia-Oklahoma game? I mean, I talked to Kevin last night. He's like, you like to think it's really good offense. I just wonder if there's no defense. I mean, there's guys that don't even want to, they're just going right by people. That was and then the one guy waxed the guy out of bounds, and that was the difference in the game with the penalty where he kept blocking the dude out of bounds.
Yeah, I didn't watch that game, but that's definitely two offenses.
Well, they were trading touchdowns back and forth. And then West Virginia didn't score one because this guy, he's blocking the guy. He's got the dude, the runner's way by him, and he keeps blocking the guy out of bounds like an idiot. And they call a foul. But now, the coach is still pissed about it. But if you watch the replay, it was obviously he did it. I mean, it was not even close. So, I mean, that was the difference in the game. So, Frank.
What about Texas A&M, or Texas, not Texas. Yeah, Texas A&M LSU. 7 overtimes?
Yeah.
They dumped the Gatorade on the LSU coach because they thought the game was over and the refs put 1 second back on the clock.
Wow, I didn't see that.
Well, I love interviews with Ed Orgeron. Really good football.
Oh, yeah. He's got the thick Cajun accent.
All right, Frank, give us the last market blaster.
Oh, I know. It's like the hillbilly bear. Yeah?
give us a market blaster. What are you doing? We're back up 32 points in the S&P. I don't know. This is crazy stuff. I mean, I don't know why we were down Friday, and I'm not sure why we're bouncing back twice as much today. But does that mean we're having a good Christmas or what? Or we had a good couple days?
I think so. I just bought a butterfly in the S&P. So a small butterfly, a small purchase of a butterfly, and I'm putting in an offer, good till canceled, and walking away and doing chores today.
Well, good luck on that one, buddy. I assume it's to the downside, not the upside.
Yeah, it's to the downside, and it's basically centered right here. I'm going to nibble. I'm that remora swimming in and out of the mouth of sharks. I don't understand why we went up. I can see why we went down, but, you know, I've been around so long that you have to temper what I say by realizing I'm sort of a perma-bear.
Oh, God. All right, Frank, take care of yourself. We'll talk to you later in a week.
Okay, have a good one.
This college stuff comes out. SP Futures up 30. Be right back. Professor Elsner. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello, everyone. Thanks, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ali, just met over the board. S&P futures up 30 now, 30 and a half, actually. Dow futures up 267. NASDAQ futures up 103. So we're hanging in here. Looked like we're dipping a little bit, then we came right back up. Very unusual after the big sell-off on Friday, which I was not ready for. I don't know where that one came. But one thing I know for sure, it's good to have Professor Hal Snar back on the air with us. Professor, how are you, buddy?
Good. I got some rest this weekend.
Well, that's a good thing. What'd you do? Yeah. Hang the triplets on a hook or what?
No, just didn't do anything. We didn't really go anywhere. We just kind of hung out at the house and had the local grocery store cater our Thanksgiving dinner. So
really?
We had to work. It was really actually quite nice.
We have a contributor to the show, fine chef Al, was giving a long story about how he's cooking for all these people, and he went out and blasted a bunch of ducks, and I don't know what else he did, but the turkey and the ducks, and then all of a sudden he told me somehow he ended up, his oven was messed up, and his turkey wasn't done, so he had to eat duck and not turkey. And then one of the guys, Greg, get a load of this, Greg goes, buys a fresh turkey at Costco, get the thing home, he's cooking for all these people, they open it up, he goes, the thing smelled awful, so they had to throw it out and head over to the Jewel and get a savior turkey from the Jewel that was allegedly fresh. But,
ours is great because we got the yams, the stuffing, and the turkey, whole turkey cooked by the local grocery store.
Wow.
Picked it up and brought it home and made some mashed potatoes and some gravy, and the next thing you know, we're eating it, and there's no mess, there's no cooking. And I thought it was a good turkey.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you got the nice, I'm sure when you say a local grocery store, we're not talking about a mom and pop or some place that's designed to cook for people like that.
It's a really nice store. They have, you know, I think it's a Utah store, but they have cooking lessons, and it's kind of they market themselves as fresh, and their food items are just really great from the deli. It's like home cooking. So it was really, really good turkey, I thought.
We've got, the Mariano's here is, you know, allegedly like that, but there's a place when I go to Columbus to visit my extended family. I don't even know the name of the damn place, but you go in there, it's like something you never saw, Hal. It's probably like the one you're talking about.
Yeah.
They got every conceivable kind of ethnic, mostly Italian stuff, but they'll cook it for you. You want spaghetti and meatballs? Here's the meatballs. Here, we'll sell you the meatballs. We'll sell you the ground beef. We'll sell you the meatballs and gravy ready to go. What do you want?
Yeah.
And everything you want. You want God, some of the stuff, like the strip steaks wrapped in bacon, they got them all wrapped in the bacon for you, ready to go, if you like that. I never even thought of that, but I'm sitting there going, God, that's going to be pretty good. You know,
yeah, the store downtown in downtown Salt Lake is awesome because they have a they have the groceries down below, and then they have this kind of cafeteria area or above where you can sit and eat the food that you just purchased. Or right next door is a chef classroom where you can learn, teach or get taught how to cook properly, which I don't know how to do. And has big glass windows, and you can see into those classrooms, and it's pretty impressive. I love the store.
Well, if you want to go a little lower than that, Chef Al will teach you how to actually butcher a rabbit or a pig or something. He has classes.
Well, my cousins know how to do that. They go out hunting for elk and deer, and they have bows and arrows, and they gut and clean the deer in their garage. So,
yeah, these guys do that too. They just came back from somewhere in southern Illinois, and I'm like,
I'd rather just buy it butchered. I really would. I don't want to go out in the cold and shoot a deer with a freaking bow and arrow. I don't want to do that. That's not much fun to me.
These dudes love this stuff, and they can't wait for the next time. You know what? God love them, but it's just not me. Hell, I was here. Get a load of this. Not because you were coming on today, but I decided on one of the days last week there wasn't much trading going on, so I'm cleaning up all my stuff, right? Some would say mess. And I did
organize the mess?
Pretty much. throw some stuff out. But what I'm trying to do is I'm organizing all these old stuff that I ran off in the net years ago when you couldn't find it as easily going back. So I basically ran them all off. So I got these stacks of old economic papers that people wrote and statistics and so forth. And it's really pretty interesting how you went back, Alan. I was looking, I know people know if they listen to the show, they'll probably say one thing that all this guy does is rag about inflation all the time. And a lot of the stuff I went back to from 2014, 2013, when we're doing the show, every one of the articles, there had to be a string of 100 of them. All they did was talk about from 2000 on, 1980, really since the early Clinton administration. Some go back as far as Reagan. How if you look at the salaries and look at the inflation numbers and look at people's alleged how much people in the country have done better and how great it's been, and you listen to our current president who says the best thing in the world that happened to be thankful for is himself in the last 2 years because the economy's better. The hit to the middle class, if you go back and read a lot of these articles, of course I couldn't resist reading them as I was filing them. The hit to the middle class in the last 25 years. I don't think it's possible to even get a handle on it until you read all this stuff. I mean, it's brutal. It's absolutely brutal. Where you're talking about salaries up, maybe a 50% and the cost of a lot of stuff is up 1,000%. It's not even close. If you look at medical care and housing and some of the stuff, I don't want to rattle off the numbers because there's too many of them, but if you look at over a long period of time, it's one thing to say, I disagree with the CPI number last month. It should be, 0.3% instead of 0.2. It's one thing to try and have that debate either on the air or on TV or wherever you're going, but to look at the 20-year span or 15-year span, it's mind-boggling the difference how much these numbers miss the mark in terms of how the people in the middle, the guy who used to own 30 middle class family, I'm thinking what used to be considered middle class, the median family like 15 years ago was making $39,000, now they're making $56,000. And yet the inflation rate has them doing like okay, but you look at some of the individual things in the pile, the medical care up 1,200%, houses up 1,000. It's unbelievable the difference, and I don't know. If you even talk about it, people don't believe you. It's that crazy.
One of the problems with using those numbers is that the median household has probably shrank. Young people aren't getting married. They're maybe going to push back marriage maybe a decade. And if they do get married, they're going to end up having fewer kids. So maybe the median household income is shrinking, but if you divide it by the number of people in that household, I don't think it's as stark as people think it is.
Well, but the individual was $36,000 now. It was 33 10 years ago.
Yeah. Well, there's also really incredible innovations, too. I mean, if you factor in all the incredible innovations and the fact that a big widescreen TV, was probably $8,000 back then, and that same TV, a better TV with higher quality is, probably around $1,000. So if you separate the two groups of goods from those goods produced in industries that are heavily managed, organized, owned, or operated by government, and you pair them to the goods and services that are produced by a relatively free market, you see prices and quality drop in that one sector where there's economic liberty, and you see massive inflation in the industries that are massively regulated, owned, or managed by government. So
I don't
you
kind
of have to separate out the two. And, you know, education, healthcare, banking, housing, all that stuff is on one side. Electronics, computers, television, entertainment is in a segment that's relatively free of government control or management or ownership.
So how do you, in terms of numbers, and I know you got guys, I mean, working for you that are getting degrees and so forth, just in terms of if we're going to actually try and create like something today that would give somebody a clue as to how well they're doing, income versus inflation versus, in other words, how their economic livelihood is. I think right now that if the cost of like you mentioned, a terrific widescreen TV went from $2,000 to $1,000, all right, over a period of time, that it's gonna be down 3%, okay, versus say medical care or home insurance or something like that. Maybe it goes up, you know, less than that. But I don't know if there's any difference between one that you pay every month or every year versus the TV that lasts you 10 years. I mean, you're not buying a TV a month. Where you're paying,
oh, no, you're not. Yeah.
So you're paying your mortgage per month. You're paying your health care per month. I don't know. That, I mean, I think the whole thing, that's why I want to take a 20-year snapshot on it. The whole thing is bogus at the end of 20 years, is what I'm saying.
Well,
yes.
One way you can do it is you can take, median or average household income or personal income and use it to calculate how much time it takes to acquire goods and services.
Right.
Today versus, say, 20, 30 years ago. And Don Bordereau did a really good job of this in a PowerPoint that I've since, used. And altered, but he uses time, the amount of time it takes to buy these goods and services, and when you use time instead of median or average personal income, you're better off today than you were, say, 20, 30 years ago. And it's pretty interesting. I mean, I could share the one of these days I'm going to turn it into a video, but it's a pretty interesting PowerPoint, and I go even further by putting everything in a spreadsheet and calculating the amount of time it takes to buy the goods in the PowerPoint, and it includes everything from groceries to filing cabinets and televisions, whatnot.
Hell, do you know?
I put it in a spreadsheet, and you know it's much easier to buy goods and services today than it was, say, 20, 30 years ago. Some of those goods and services don't exist anymore because we have technologies that have replaced them.
I agree, but The thing, though, that I was reading something 2 weeks ago, and it had to do with, according to our Bureau of Labor Statistics, they claim that since the year 2000, the price of a pickup has not gone up. And yet, I bought a pickup in 2000, extended cab, all tricked out. The only thing I didn't have was the leather seats because I didn't want them. And I priced one today. I paid $30, and today that's $45. So how the hell could they be? That's 50% higher. How is it that they have it the same price? I mean, I know the new one has a backup camera. It's got a couple more computers, but I'm not so sure. I would challenge you that the 2000 had the same motor, and I'm going to say that it probably will last every bit as long as the new one. Maybe not quite. There's no way that you could put a 50% increase in quality on the thing. No way.
I agree with you on that. The pickup truck has increased in price, but what about the gas mileage?
Right? It's the same thing. It's a 5.3 liter.
Mileage?
So it's maybe one or two better, maybe.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, in that regard, you know, what I say is one of the problems that Apple's having, it's kind of like one of the problems that these car companies are having, is that they're competing against the products they produced previously, right? So, you know, Apple's selling these new, you know, huge iPhones, but those huge new iPhones are competing with iPhones that they produced a year ago or 2 years ago or 3 years ago. And if a person doesn't like a $45,000 price for a a brand new pickup, man, there's always, you can go to, you know, my favorite auto dealer, the one I bought my last two cars with.
Oh, CarMax or somebody?
What am I saying?
CarMax.
CarMax. You can go into CarMax and you buy a truck with 10,000 miles on it, and it comes with my favorite option, door dings. I love door dings. Door dings reduce the cost of my vehicle purchases probably by about $10,000 to $15,000. It's great.
What's a door ding?
The car comes with a door ding.
A door ding, ding, ding. Okay, all right.
Yeah, I love door dings, man. Those are great.
I bet you could find someone that were flooded in the south, and you'd get a real deal on those.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the problem with a lot of these car companies is that, you know, I can buy the brand new one for $45,000, or I could buy one that has 10,000 miles on it for probably half the price.
Well, I sold a 2000 to a guy, a friend of mine's son who was coming back from Iraq, and he's a carpenter and wanted one. I had two. So I sold him one for I think I got $5,800 for it, which was the person's price. Mm-hmm. And I'll bet 5 years later, with even another 30 or 40,000 miles on it, I could still get the $5,800 I sold it for. I'd probably do more. But my point, Hal, is that, you know, by the way, you know how historic you are in what you just said regarding time? I was watching something from ancient Rome the other day.
Nice.
Yeah, regarding their, they have the same thing. I don't know if we talked about this last time. No, I talked about this with Carl. The same thing, well, I'm not predicting that we're going to do the same thing, but the same crap essentially that we're doing here, Rome did.
Oh, yeah, exactly, yeah.
Whatever the coin was, guess what the coin represented, that coin, I mean, the amount of silver in the coin.
Yeah, it was almost 100%, and then 100 years later it was down to, like, what, 7%?
But it was a day's work for a good worker. That's what one coin was.
Yeah.
So then this weekend, I don't know, up early, and I'm watching this thing about they're going after this ship in the English Channel that dropped all these Dutch coins in there and something. It was classic because they found coins on there they shouldn't have found. So, of course, they go with all these historians, and they find out that in addition to the official coins, was it Dutch East India Company or whatever? The official coins, there's all these other coins that were the smugglers' coins. And they were at a different part of the ship. I'm like, God, human nature doesn't change, does it? But anyway, guess what the silver in the coin represented in whatever this was, 16-something-something, a day's work. So what you're talking about in terms of time, I would agree with you. Actually, with some of the stuff I dug out, I looked in to see what the wages were in like 1976, 1977 for people in various factories. And a lot of the good workers, they're making like $11.50 an hour back in those days. So that's, what's it, 2,000 hours. So you're talking $25,000 a year, right?
Yeah.
Plus maybe a little overtime. Maybe you could push it to 30. But say 25, 27. Hell, a car was 3,000.
Yeah.
I know a house was, 40,000 maybe. And yeah. Notre Dame education was 5. And now that same person, say he's making 50, which he probably isn't in a factory, but say he is. The car's 40 or 30 something. Notre Dame education's 65 and the house is, 250. So, I mean, the gross numbers don't lie. I mean, they're.
Well, you know, one thing about that in the 1970s is that you couldn't rent your car out. If you think about what a car is, it's kind of basically it's a wasted investment back in the 1970s because you just sat in your car garage, right? But today, if you buy that brand new car, you can drive people around on Uber, you can drive people around on Lyft, and you can earn quite a bit of money doing that, right? So you can turn what used to be wasted assets into money-making miniature money printing presses. I tell everybody my motorhome is my printing press, and whenever we need a little extra money, I rent it out for a week. So, I mean, those things have changed through time, and they're going to continue to change. And I can actually see a time where people buy a car, and it's self-driving, and when they go on vacation, they pay for their vacation because they're renting the car out while they're on vacation.
Well, but you're also...
There's a lot of opportunity for people to make money in ways they couldn't even imagine, you know, 20, 30 years ago.
Well, the only problem with that is at some point, Hal, I will have to get a roof-mounted machine gun for the Uber and Lyft people in Chicago. If I get one more guy cut in front of me from the left lane to make a right turn because somebody just came up. I mean, these people are nuts. They're these
well,
city
it can be worse
than
the taxicab drivers in New York where the have you ever been in New York City and driven
there?
Oh,
got you. Yeah.
The road markings are optional, completely optional.
Yeah.
And then on Flatbush Avenue out there in Brooklyn, man, you got left turners, you got double parkers, and, and on top of that, you got the dollar cabs, right? So it's like a full contact sport driving in New York City.
Well, at least the cabs, they're all painted yellow. You know they're a cab.
Yeah.
And you
yeah.
know it's the guy's livelihood, and you
well,
give,
don't you
you
see
give
the
him a break.
Mustache on the lift cars?
God. But it's, I mean, I Manny, how bad is it? I mean, they will stop in the middle of the expressway to let somebody off. They have no concept. I mean,
yeah.
The idea of not giving these idiots a 1 week, you know, class in, I mean, I'm not big on regulation, and whenever Milton Friedman used to constantly rag about regulation, he had two places, his two favorite whipping boys were cab drivers and cab medallions, and why the city shouldn't control the amount of cab medallions and the market should. And I obviously agree with him on that. And the other was, why should the doctors control the amount of people that go to med school? I mean, it's like, you know, that's sort of crazy, too.
The nurses that control the number of people that go to nursing school, right?
Right, same thing. But those are his two biggest. But there's a flip side to that, too. I don't think that I have a problem with... I mean, if I'm mayor of whatever city it is, I'm fully cognizant that the first face you're going to see, maybe not so much anymore, is a cab driver. And if all of a sudden, you know, the guy doesn't know where he's going, overcharges you, and the cab stinks, you know, I got a problem with that if it's my city. Not my city, but if it's everybody's city. I mean, in London, I don't know if they restrict the amount of cabbies, but I think, of course, London, I mean, I've never been there, but here it's, to know London is a full-time job because it's not exactly a grid system, but, isn't the cab driver like a 6 week course where you have to know where every street is, where everything? I don't have a problem with people throwing a thing up saying taxi, being able to take the course and have to pass, assuming it's realistic. I mean, why should anybody be able to go out and be an idiot? I mean, why should I be out and represent myself as a house painter if I don't know how to paint? You know, I mean, if I just mess up somebody's house, I guess it's their fault for not asking for references. But in a city, if I land in London and plop my behind in a cab, I've had cabs try and screw me over where they went the wrong direction and came back and didn't realize I knew the city somewhat.
Well, there's a famous or a favorite episode of Wings where the cab driver played, you know, Antonio Scarpacci. He gets a letter from the government saying he's going to be deported, and he complains about the fact that he just learned all the longest routes.
We had a guy,
and he's a cab driver that has a medallion, right?
Oh, yeah, we had a guy in, I don't know how much you know Las Vegas, but we were staying at the Rio. We were having this big seminar at Caesar's Palace, and the place was jammed, so we ended up staying at the Rio. So Sunday morning at 7 o'clock, JD and I get in this cab, and I go, we just want to go over the Rio, or to Caesar's Palace. And you can see it. It's you know, we just had all this stuff, and we would have walked, except we had, you know, all kinds of new seminar equipment and everything. So the guy gets in, all of a sudden he's on the freeway. And I go,
oh, man.
I go, hey, buddy, where the hell are you going? He goes, I'm going to Caesar's Palace. And I go, hey, I'm too old of a cat to get bleeped by a kitten. What are you doing? It's right over there. All you do is make a left turn into the parking lot. Yeah. Oh, you wanted to go to Caesar's? Yeah, I wanted to go to... Anyway, so the bill's
you
like...
You wanted to go to Little Caesar's.
Yeah, Little Caesar's restaurant.
Suburb.
Yeah, in the suburb. So then I stiffed the guy on the dough. I wasn't going to pay him full board. He's all pissed off. I'm like, what are you pissed off at? You want me to call the police? No, don't do that. I'm like, okay. Anyway. But yeah, I mean, how do we... If you're in government, you know, let's turn it around. We look at the numbers, and to varying degrees, you and I see that we're basically lying to people. Intentionally, I'm thinking. But if you turn it around and you and I are now, you know, one of us is Mnuchin and the other one's Trump, oh, geez. Where exactly, how do you turn this bus around? How do you not keep up with inflation for people that are getting Social Security checks in other places? And yet, by the same time, you got all this debt out there, and you're not going to pay for it unless you somehow inflate things a little bit, even if you can do that. How do you do both things? How do you learn how to swim and stay dry? I mean, the challenge that these guys are giving themselves is pretty dramatic to me. Not to mention the people who are running. But even if Solomon was running, I think he'd have a rough time. Figure out what's going on. Go ahead.
What, what, what you have to do is you have to figure out, all right, who started the banks or the Federal Reserve System, and why did they start it? Well, they started to create a goal of 3 or 4% inflation a year. So what does that do? That increases rents geometrically through time. And at the same time, if you had a fixed rate mortgage, your mortgages are flat. So what you do is you kind of emulate the people, the grand wizards behind the scene, right? The little man behind the curtain. You emulate them. So what my wife and I are doing is we're trying to accumulate 10 to 12 rental properties by the time we retire. And we're not going to, once we get these rental properties and we're starting to make nice cash flow, we're not going to make the mistake of doing what? Going to Jamaica for a week and blowing the nice cash flows that we're getting. What we're going to do is we're going to put that money back into our rental properties, and we're going to reinvest that money so that we're always attracting good quality tenants. When the thing that people hear about doing this is that eventually it's a horrible experience because you end up with tenants who don't pay rent. But if you soak your profits from your cash flows back in your property so that your properties are always kind of nice, you're going to attract the kind of tenant that cares about their credit. And so that's what my wife and I are going to do. And by the time we retire, we're not going to have to worry about whether our Social Security check goes far enough, because, frankly, I don't think Social Security is going to be all that much in 20 years when I decide to, you know, hang up teaching, or when my wife decides to, you know, stop going to college.
Without praying, I would, because I was at a wedding a couple weeks ago talking to a guy. I always got a guy.
You're like my mother-in-law. She has a guy.
You got to have guys. You know, the when I was in this, lady who's come on the show and still might one of these days, Robin, she and I were in the condominium remodeling business / flip / rental business, whatever you want to call it.
I'm not talking about flipping though. Right?
No, what I'm saying is back in the late 70s when a condo craze hit Chicago. Before that, you couldn't have a separate deed in a house. There was only one deed on a piece, and then somehow or another, I don't know who decided you could sell apartments essentially, but and split the deed. Well, anyway, the condos are a phenomenon of the late 70s, and I don't know really the history of it. But before that, they just had co-ops. It was one deed to the whole building, and you could co-op it, but you couldn't have a deed. Anyway, long story. But the prices went from cash break even right out of the gate. Then it was cash break even after depreciation. Then it was cash break even after tax. Then it was, you know, 125. Trying to pick a price. Now, when you say you want to accumulate rental properties, now, to me, the question is how much. The guy I talked to last week is from New York. I mean, they moved out there, and they're paying $4,000 in a one-bedroom in Brooklyn, $4,000 a month. And the owner, has three rental units and something at the bottom that he couldn't figure out how to rent yet, or probably could, or whatever it was. Bottom line is his rent is gross is $150,000 a year. I can only imagine what the taxes. The guy paid $3.5 million for the place 2 years ago, and I'm thinking, okay, his rent has to damn near triple to have that thing worth $3.5 million, maybe 2.5 times. I don't know if I'd bet the future that much. I'm not saying that the year 2040 he's not going to get there, but I got to believe if that rent is still there 2 years from now, or even if it's $4,200. Your mortgage rates are up to 6, and the taxes are up 20%. That's $3.5 million. If he puts it on the market, he's lucky to get 2.
Well, I wouldn't do this in New York City. That's okay. The place I wouldn't do. My in-laws rent their first house out in Levels, and there's no way I'd do it in New York City. The landlord laws are totally skewed toward the tenants, and they're trying to get a client evicted, and they have to go to court to do it. So I would never do this in New York City. I think if you're going to do this in New York City, what you do is you kind of like, you buy a property, then you rent it out to cover the mortgage, and then you sell it in 2 years because you're going to get a nice appreciation. So I think flipping in New York City would make sense, hold and sell, right? But what I want to do is I want to do it out here in, say, Utah, or in a place where it's more friendly to the owner in terms of
if you had to estimate, I'm not praying. Yeah, that's me. What do you think the average prices people are? Manny, what do you think the average prices in Chicago? I mean, I honestly don't know. I mean, if you look at our place, where Manny and I both live, it's a 4-flat. I'm going to say if we wanted to rape and pillage, we could probably get four, maybe $6,000 a month out of the place. And so what's 6 times 12 is 72, correct? Still, even in my advanced age.
That's right.
So that's $72,000 a year. The tax has got to be 30. The water bills, whatever. I mean, I got to believe that if you paid more than about $750 to place, you're paying way too much, you know? And yet, I bet it goes for $1.3 million. I'm saying, how would somebody get that $1.3 million back? I love the idea of rental properties, but whatever it is, I like the idea of concert tickets. I like the idea of Cub tickets, but I'm always going to ask how much. Because that's the market maker in me. There's a time you want to be an owner of rental properties. There's a time you want to be a seller. What is it by you now? In other words, if you went out tomorrow, if I gave you $500,000 and said, okay, here, this is for you and the wife, are you going to be happy with a price tomorrow of a six flat, I guess is my question. Or do you think it's too much?
Well, I'm going to wait for, last night I tweeted the yield curve, and it's indicating the recession is around the corner. I know I've been saying this for a while, but who wouldn't have known the Fed would have kept interest rates at zero for, 8 years? But if you look at the yield curve, it's heading to negative territory. It's pretty close to negative territory. So there's a recession coming around, and I'm going to be looking for a really good deal, maybe a couple of really good deals, during the next recession. And I think home prices in Utah, I mean, they're starting to look like Silicon Valley. I mean, I could rent out my current townhouse condominium for $2,000 a month. And that was just unheard of, say, 5-6 years ago. I mean, $2,000 a month for a townhome condominium, I mean, it is just off the tracks, our version of the L train. But I think the key is to buy when prices can't get any lower and sell, if you're going to sell, when you're at the top of the bubble. And timing that is really hard, right? So I'm going to be looking for a couple bargains during the next recession, which I think could be within the next year or so. Just in time for the next election, right?
Possibly. I mean, it depends on. There's a big here in Chicago. And I don't know what I'd love to hear in Chicago. And this is the thing that I keep talking about. And I know it makes me sound negative, which I don't want to be because I want to find the solution. But to me, when you have $840,000 debt per family, countrywide, mostly now government more so than people. Although if you allow the student loan in there, that's a lot. People get the feeling, it's not something you want to talk about over every beer in every bar because all it does is depress you when you're supposed to be watching a football game. But, God, how people have no clue that this is really on their shoulders.
Well, they've been sold a bill of goods that I think is flawed. They've been convinced to be consumers. And I think I've mentioned this before. I don't know if I mentioned it here, but I mentioned my class a lot. There's a reason why Jewish people are persecuted throughout history, because they understand what coveting does. Coveting leads to consumerism. So if you don't covet, you don't become a consumer. And Jewish people also understand the importance of sowing. So if you combine not coveting your neighbor's stuff or junk or crap, as Neil Young sings about.
Yeah.
If you don't covet your neighbor's stuff and you sow, you don't use your profits from your rental properties to go to Jamaica, you don't use it to buy a brand new BMW, you don't use it to buy a brand new pickup truck, you put that money back into your properties, you keep your properties up, you can grow wealth that way. And I think what most Americans have bought into is what Bush talked about after 9/11. Go out there, ignore 9/11, ignore the fact that these buildings were knocked down, and just be good little consumers, right? And that is the problem that most Americans are in. I mean, do you think I shop on Black Friday or Black Monday? I don't even go to the internet on Monday. I'm so opposed to this consumerism. So we don't go to these sale events after Thanksgiving. We don't go on Thanksgiving. I'm looking for probably bargains around the 15th of December. And we're looking at having a very modest Christmas, where most Americans are out there beating each other up because they bought into this idea that we have to be good little consumers. And that's where the problem is, that we've been convinced that we have to be consumers. What we should be is we should be savers and investors.
I don't disagree with that. I will say this, though. Hal, for a guy who needs everything in a tall size, even though I'm not as tall as I used to be, probably. I won't say probably. I'm saying definitely. the world has sort of changed in terms of, and again, I am no shopper, but I used to get a little of this. This is back in the good old days. Guess what my Christmas shopping used to consist of?
A pair of pants and a shirt.
No, I would, the trading pit, we stopped trading at 3:15.
Uh-huh.
And I'd tell everybody, I'll meet you at Ceres at 5. And I would, on my hot little legs, I'd race over to Marshall Fields. Back when there still was a Marshall Fields, I refused to go into Macy's. I'd go downstairs into the men's store, and I'd find the guy at the Ralph Lauren. They had every size there, and I'd say, it's my stepfather, my brother, my nephews, line me up. And I'd be there maybe 20 minutes. They'd wrap everything for me, you know, whatever. I might have been paying a couple of cents too much, but still, it wasn't horrible.
Yeah.
And I'd grab a couple of those... what do you call things with the wine and the cheese in there? Because it's Christmas Eve, so of course everything is. This would be Christmas Eve after trading. I'd say,
wow,
and I'd get two of those things at like half off. I'd somehow, because I was young and strong, I'd throw them on my shoulders. Look, I'd be in the bar at 5, and I'd be as happy as a clam. You try and go anywhere Christmas Eve now, especially if you're an odd size. If you don't get stuff now, you're not going to get it because these places do not have any kind of inventory. Come Christmas Eve.
Oh, they don't have any.
They have nothing. They have
exactly,
zero.
Yeah.
So if you don't get it early, you're not getting it, which is fine with me because I'm not that much of a shopper anyway. But I'm saying if you actually want to get the right size boot from L.L. Bean at 20% off, you better get it today because 3 weeks from now, guess what? There's no 11s around. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know what I do? I buy a pair of black Nike tennis shoes that are all black, and I wear them for a year. I usually get them around June. And they're great. They look good in church. They look good in, I don't know if they look good, but they look like dress shoes in church. They look like dress shoes at work, and they're comfortable. And I can wear them for everything. I wear them in my suit pants. I wear them in my shorts.
Well, if you're big enough, Al, which you are, who's the guy? Who's the guy who had the quiz show? The old Jewish guy. What's his name? Ben Stein's Money. Remember that?
Oh,
show?
Yeah.
Well, Ben Stein came and spoke at the Stack one year. You know,
that would have been interesting.
Well, he's got the investment thing lost in stone. You know, when I say that, I listen to most of these guys, and let's put it this way, I'm pretty good at using options for retail people.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to be in the market and you're concerned about the downside, there's a way we can deal with that. If you want to have your stuff in cash, but still want to have a little bit in the market, we can deal with that. So there's ways to be sort of in and sort of out. Where these old guys, you're either in or you're out. You know, you're in cash. You don't have to be like that. I mean, you can be sort of in and sort of out, or sort of out. But remember, what I wanted to say, you know, is people are somewhat ignoring, I think, that some of these asset prices. I mean, the people here in Chicago, we mentioned earlier, some areas now because of the demise of some of the malls and some stuff. Their taxes have gone up 2 and 3 times. But you can't ignore the fact that there's $800,000 of taxes on every family. I mean, I firmly believe if we have even a shred of a recession, or if we get a president that knows how to add, that we will see a pretty serious tax increase in the next 24 months. Just like Reagan in 1982 that people forgot about. We're going to see something. There'll be a big increase in the gas tax. There'll be a big increase in people.
Did you hear about the revolts going on in Paris because of the hike in the gas tax?
Yeah. Well, I'm saying, but my point is, but for people to think that when you have a $1 trillion deficit a year, that a tax cut doesn't leave you more wide open. And you listen to these guys telling you how at the end of the year, we're going to end up with more money coming in. A couple of rare cases, maybe in the early 80s when we were in a huge depression or recession over a long period of time, maybe in a couple of rare cases, the numbers actually will show up at the end of the year looking like as the economy picks up. If Congress's timing is perfect coming out of a recession and expansion, that actually probably could happen, Harold. But I'm not going to, I mean, it's like, yeah, I guess I could flip a coin and it could land on its side, but it probably won't. I mean, the numbers, I mean, one of my buddies who comes on the show a lot, he's got a 30% tax increase in his townhome in near Northside.
Wow.
And I said, well, you know, you do realize that the price of this thing went from $400 down to $360 or $350 if you're talking about money per month. And he goes, yeah, unfortunately I do. He goes, this is not a good day. I mean, okay, so now you go, the people who can afford to buy the place, pick a number, Al, six grand a month. Okay, that's how much the world can afford to pay for this place, your rental properties, whatever. What's the taxes? Well, they're three. What's the interest rate? It's here. Okay, I can pay you $270 for the place. Yeah, but I paid four. I don't care what you paid. I can pay $270. Do you want it or don't you? You know what I'm saying? Because that's what $6,000 a month buys me now. It used to buy me four. Now it doesn't. I mean, the math here is it worries me, Hal, that the math is not all that well known. It doesn't appear, or not well recognized.
Well, yeah. So my point would be, though, if the taxes in a current location are high, there's always in the future those be more likely to occur because, you know, the digitalization of all jobs is eventually coming. But if you get to the point where you can't afford the taxes in a certain location, there's always the possibility that you can move somewhere else.
Well,
right?
Sure. The point is, when you sell your home, are you taking a hit or making a profit?
Yeah.
That's my point. Hal, thank you very much, buddy. Good to have you back. We'll have you back soon. Very interesting, as usual. S&P Futures up 229, 290. Dow Futures up 255. With Mr. David Animal, when we come back.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it is time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control. Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. You just met over on the floor. Mr. David Handelman here in a second. Just so you, if you may not have been here, you might have been out of town, or you might have been God knows where. Well, just for a review, on Friday, the Dow was down 178, S&P down 17, NASDAQ down 33, which is very, very unusual on a Black Friday. Oil got absolutely slammed, down like $4, gold got clobbered. Now today, S&P futures are up 29, so we're way past where we were down Friday. Dow futures up 252, and NASDAQ futures up 104, so NASDAQ futures are back almost three times what we were down. We had oil up 88 cents, which if you're bullish oil, I guess is good news, except if you remember the down four on Friday, it's a little bit of a dead cat bounce. 10-year yield, 3.06. Over in Europe, we've got DAX up 128, 1.1%, FTSE up 47.7, CAC run up 34.7. I guess the Brexit deal is probably going to happen, even though I don't think a lot of people like it. Nikkei up 165.7%, Shanghai down 3, call that flat. Hang Seng up 448, 1.7%. Again, we've got West Texas up 88 cents. It was only up like 20 when we came in, 20 or 30. Brent up 134, 60, back over 60. Brent that was supposed to be 100 by now is barely over 60, so take that. Natural gas down 21 cents, 4.10. RBOB 141, as low as we've seen it in like a real long time. And I'm glad that I almost have the Suburban tank down to where I probably could take a 30-gallon drink. I'll get it a lot cheaper. Home heating oil, 189. In the midst of this horrible weather, home heating oil is actually down 11 cents in the last week. You don't see that too often. Gold up $2.20. Silver up 5 cents, 14.29. Manny, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, college playoffs. This should be interesting this week.
It should be. It's going to come down to some championship games, it looks like. 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. As we've been talking about all morning, all kinds of weather issues this morning, as we did have some pretty significant snowfall, especially in the suburbs, last night and into this morning. And now it's hitting the city in full force, and it looks like it will be until between 9 and 10 o'clock this morning. And that's causing major delays on the expressways, roadways, tollways, side streets, bridges, everything in the area, as you can imagine. We have a rollover crash on the outbound Bishop Ford on the south side at 111th Street that's causing delays on I-94. On the Stevenson, there's snow on the roadway just before Kedzie Avenue that hasn't been cleared yet for whatever reason, and that is causing significant delays as folks have to slow way down on the Stevenson right at Kedzie there. It's an hour and 8 minutes now from the tri-state.
Go faster.
Yeah.
It's slippery.
And all kinds of delays there. North side, we had earlier issues on the Edens and some of the I-90 westbound out near the expressway, but no, or out near the airport, but no accidents or issues there right now. It's just significant delays. Western suburbs are probably the worst of it right now at the moment. Naperville's reporting around 10 inches of snow. Further inland, you're looking at 6 to 8 inches, depending on where you are. And there's all kinds of delays on the Eisenhower 88 specifically. Give yourself plenty of time or take the train. That's what I would do. Weather today, like I said, the snow will taper off between 9 and 10 this morning downtown. We'll continue with high winds throughout the day, but the snow will stop. We're not expecting a ton of accumulation downtown, just a few inches, but all kinds of slush that could turn into ice later on tonight, so make sure to clear your sidewalks and your steps. High of just 32 today. Right now it's snowing, very low visibility, and 31 degrees. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 75. Right now it's mostly clear and 46. In sports, Sunday Night Football last night, it was the Vikings over the Packers 24-17. Packers still have not won a road game. Vikings keep pace with the Bears. They're 6-4-1 now. Bears are 8-3. Mitch Trubisky still day-to-day as they'll take on the Giants on Sunday afternoon. That's in the Meadowlands. Otherwise, it'll be Chase Daniel if Mitch is not cleared. Arizona Cardinals were blown out by the Chargers 45-10. In hockey, Blackhawks made a trade that we talked about a bit earlier, sending Nick Schmaltz to the Coyotes for a couple of former first-round picks who have also struggled. In hockey, Coyotes lost to the Flames 6-1. Blackhawks were off. In NBA hoops, Bulls were off. They welcomed the Spurs in the town tonight. Suns were beaten by the Pistons 118-107. And in college hoops, it was Northwestern with a nice blowout win over Utah 79-57. Illinois beat Mississippi Valley State. Chief.
All right, so David, is David with us?
He is.
David, yes, I'm here.
David, who do we have in the college playoff, and who moves up and in if anything happens? We've got Georgia probably going to take.
Doesn't Alabama have to play Clemson, so that would invite Notre Dame to make the playoffs?
No, they're gonna play Georgia. Right?
So right now you have Alabama number one, you have Clemson number two, Notre Dame number three, and then the four spot is currently likely. I think it gets announced tomorrow, but everyone's predicting that it'll be Georgia, but Georgia has to play Alabama in the SEC championship game. So Georgia is likely going to lose that game, and they'll drop, and it'll be Oklahoma, Ohio State, and a few other teams competing for that fourth spot.
Washington State, those guys, they're out, right?
Well,
and then Ohio State plays Northwestern for Big Ten, right?
Right.
Exactly, yep. And
right.
If Ohio State, you know, goes and wins, you know, 63-10 over Northwestern or something like that, don't be surprised if they sneak in, because they would love a Big Ten team in the Final Four.
Well, who ended up winning the Washington State game in the snow?
I think – I don't know. I have to look.
But none of those guys are – it's probably going to be Oklahoma. If anybody moves up, it's going to be – well, the chalk has it, David, if Georgia wins, Georgia and Alabama are both in.
Yeah, so Washington beat Washington State, so that eliminated Washington State.
Right.
The only teams that really have a shot are Ohio State, Oklahoma, and Georgia. Those are the three one-loss teams competing for one spot. Clemson.
Now, what if Georgia beat Alabama?
Then that's a big debate, because a lot of people think Alabama would stay in. But if Alabama, you know, they have not played a very tough schedule, and if
there's an understatement.
Yeah, and if they lose, you know, arguably their one of their only two or three tough games all year, if they lose that, and Ohio State or Oklahoma wins their championship game easy, you know, could they potentially leapfrog Alabama? Yeah, they could. I don't think they would, but they could.
Right.
First of all, I don't think Alabama's going to lose to Georgia, but that could happen too.
Oh, so we race the first thing. If one of the two is going to jump, Ohio State or Oklahoma, who jumps?
Well, I think it depends on what they do in the championship game. If Ohio State wins by a ton over Northwestern and Oklahoma squeaks by Texas, then you know that's good.
Is Texas better? How can I say this? Is Texas better than Northwestern? How do they rank in terms of opponent this weekend?
Right now, Texas is ranked ninth tentatively. And Northwestern is 21st.
So Texas is better.
But like I said, if Ohio State wins by five or six touchdowns and Oklahoma wins by one or something, or wins in overtime, there'd be an argument there.
Which conference do you think has more pull, Big Ten or...
Big Ten, I think, has... Yeah. I think the Big Ten might have more pull than anyone, because they have the most money. But, you know, that doesn't make them the best conference by any means. And when Notre Dame's getting in there not representing a conference, then you know you're going to have a couple conferences.
Didn't Ohio State a couple years ago win with one loss? They came in and smoked people?
Yeah, they have.
And so they got that reputation. Where the Irish have the other reputation. They probably shouldn't be there.
Yeah, but the Irish aren't going anywhere.
No.
They're locked in. And I don't think Alabama or Clemson are going to lose their conference championship game, so I think they're locked in. I think it's going to be between Oklahoma and Ohio State to steal that fourth spot.
And Oklahoma's probably...
And they both have one loss.
They're in a position where they're pissed off, because if it wasn't for Notre Dame, they'd be in.
Yeah, and Ohio State could say the same thing. Oklahoma lost earlier in the year by 3 to Texas on a neutral field. That's their only loss. They have wins over West Virginia, who's ranked, over Oklahoma State, who's solid, over at Iowa State, who's ranked, and that's it.
But
so
if
they haven't played that tough of a schedule.
But if the Irish were in a conference, it would be the ACC, and they would have to play Clemson, and only one of them would be in there.
Right.
That would be the bitch.
Ohio State's schedule, also not great.
No.
They won at Penn State, which is a good win. who's a 9-3 team and who's ranked. They won at Michigan State, who's okay. Really, Ohio State has one good win, and that's they beat a top five Michigan team by like by you know 3 or 4 touchdowns. Now Northwestern is ranked, so that'll give them one more good win. So if they can beat Northwestern, then they would have three what I would consider good wins over top 20 teams.
Well, but you look at the schedule going in. I'm going to say the only I don't really know Clemson's schedule, so I shouldn't make this statement. You know more about this than me, but I'm going to say the only one with a weenie schedule going in was Alabama. The Irish schedule turned out to not be.
The problem with the Irish's schedule is when they played teams, we thought they were good, and it turned out a lot of them weren't.
Right.
But beating Michigan, that's a great win, obviously. Winning at Northwestern, that's a really good win. Beating Syracuse on a neutral field, that's a really good win. Is at Virginia Tech a good win? Yeah, probably. Yeah. I'd say so.
Well, it was 2 years. But I'm saying if you look at the schedule in July, you'd say, wow. You know, but then now you look at it back and you say, well, Michigan wasn't that hot. Stanford wasn't that. But Stanford was in the top five at the start of the year.
Right.
Certainly top 10.
Yeah.
But the only one I'm saying, I think, going into it, you looked at it and said, what are these guys doing, was Alabama.
Right. Right. I mean, but like a lot of Notre Dame's wins, like I said, at Virginia Tech at the time, I was like, that was a great win. Well, Virginia Tech's 5-6.
Yeah.
They're horrible. So were they good? You know, probably not. But everyone thought they were good at the beginning of the year because they beat Florida State. Well, it turned out Florida State was terrible.
Well, the Irish beat them too, and they were horrible.
Yeah, and they were horrible. USC's down this year.
But that's a schedule 9 out of 10 years you don't want.
Right, and you still have really good wins. Like I said, beating Michigan was a huge win. Beating Syracuse on a neutral field was a good win. Winning at Northwestern was a really good win. And that's probably it. They probably have three good wins. But three good wins in an undefeated season is good. I mean, that's better than Ohio State. That's better than Alabama. I have to pull up Clemson. I feel like Clemson played a tough schedule this year.
I think they did, too. Well, here's my
Clemson, real quick. They won at Texas A&M, which is a good win. They beat Syracuse, which is a good win. They beat NC State, which,
pretty good.
At the time, they were really good. They won at BC, which is solid. So, I mean, you know, their schedule's not any better than Notre Dame's.
Right. I mean, I guess if there was going to be a year, as much as I actually think Alabama's the best team in the country, even with this schedule, if they lose to Georgia, if you're going to send a slap upside the head and say, get yourself a regular schedule, this would be a year to do it. Say,
I agree.
You know, you only played two decent games and you lost one of them, you're out. You know, I mean, I don't think that's fair in terms of how good they are, but I think in terms of this would be year to do it. Say if they actually did lose to Georgia, let Oklahoma in, let Georgia in, and they're out.
But I also understand Alabama's perspective, too, because going into the year, they know or they assume that at Mississippi is going to be a really tough game. Texas A&M is a really tough game. At LSU is going to be a really tough game. Mississippi State's a tough game. Auburn is always a tough game. And then they're going to have to likely play Georgia, you know, going into the season. They're thinking that. So they're like, okay, for non-conference, since our conference is such a tough conference, you know, typically, this year it was a little bit down except for them and Georgia. But we're not going to schedule anybody. I get that.
Well, sure, but Michigan schedules Notre Dame.
Right.
Which, their off-conference game in the Big Ten is pretty darn tough.
Well, the Big Ten's not as good top to bottom typically as the SEC. But yeah, no, I mean, and that almost paid off for them. If they could have beat Ohio State, then, that would have paid off for them. Even losing to Notre Dame, they got a lot of respect for doing that.
All right, David, we got to talk about the market. What the hell happened Friday? And now we're bouncing back and we whacked Friday like a whack-a-mole and now we're up more today. Did anything happen this weekend? Are there, I heard some, I guess there's a little bit of a potential.
Well, the Brexit.
Yeah, the Brexit.
I mean, that was one, you know, potential worry. And even though the EU accepted it, there's, you know, infighting, you know, in Britain and Ireland especially. So it's not a done deal, but it's pretty close to a done deal, like it or not. So that's one little worry.
But they're not out. They got the same deal.
And I think...
Yeah.
I think Trump expressing confidence in Treasury Secretary Mnuchin, who's going to be a force in the trade negotiations, I think that helps because the Wall Street Journal, you know, ran a big article that, oh, you know, Trump's blaming Mnuchin for the stock market failure and that kind of stuff. So I think that, you know, helps a little bit.
So but, again, the White House is jacking the market around.
but I think that, you know, just... Sales are sales and profits profit, and although narrowing margins, but the online presence, you know, though up on a percentage basis less than last year, 17% on a bigger number. And the land-based stores, though traffic was down 1 to 9%, depending on who you believe, the sales were up. And, you know, I think that's going to translate into some confidence. And just from a technical standpoint, at least the NASDAQ was, you know, getting into extended territory as far as the price momentum oscillators. So, you know, the market's deserving of a little bit of a bounce. Will it hold? Being frank, probably not. The market's going to be good when it opens sharply lower, washes out, then comes back late. When it opens higher and then washes out the rest of the day, that's no good.
David, as you know, as I mentioned earlier, I'm not much of a shopper, but the stuff I do, you know, my nephews and stuff, they're big kids, not kids anymore, but I mean, they like, you know, the stuff I buy for them. I'll get them at L.L. Bean, or I'll get it at Duluth Trading or someplace. Every one of those guys, I mean, I'm just asking the question here. Again, I'm no shopper. I mentioned earlier, I used to go the other opposite. I was Christmas Eve at Marshall Fields, right? Well, now, I got stuff online for Duluth Trading 30% off, L.L. Bean 20% off. I went through the Duluth Trading stuff. Half the sizes, half the stuff that I looked at for myself, they already don't have at all. They're already out of them. So I'm going to say, just from my little survey, that these guys, if you're going to shop L.L. Bean or Duluth Trading, if you don't do it by tomorrow, which is the last day of the sale, you're a blithering idiot if you're going to do that. And by the way, I can wrap up my stuff by tomorrow night, the five presents I'm going to buy, and that's it. And I'm not going to shop the rest. And I wonder if all this stuff early on like this, it's interesting, not that the interviews that I talk to people, I listen to some interviews that people say were shopping on Friday and Thursday night and all this crap. Well, part of it was, yes, I went out, I spent about the same as I did last year, but I've got every one of my gifts. I'm done. Virtually every person said, I'm either done or got one more to get. I wonder if we haven't just pulled all this early. Not all, but a significant amount early.
I think you have a point. There was a thing between Adobe, which, you know, I know that it's graphics and software and whatever, but evidently they have polls because they do so much, you know, video work with retailers, and they said that of the people, and they questioned 10,000 people or 20,000 people, whatever, it was a broad spectrum, that said they were going to buy holiday gifts, 81% said that they were going to shop in the first 4 days. Now, hidden in that data is that they might shop again at some other time, but I think there is a kind of a psychology that the big sales happen in the first 4 days and then the last 4 days before Christmas. So, yeah, I think you have a point. And, again, just anecdotally, there's a strip over here with a Saks, you know, off Saks and a Nordstrom off the rack and a TJ Maxx, you know, and a Marshalls, you know, the cheaper stores that do get discounts. And, you know, just for the fun of it, I literally bought nothing, but I strolled through there, and it was yesterday, so it was after, or no, Saturday, Sunday, I can't even remember, but it was after Black Friday, and the racks were pretty barren, and there was one salesman in particular that I knew from a different store that was now working there, and he said that they were handing out coupons, and it was around the block, and when I went Saturday, it was about noontime. It was empty, but the racks had been picked over pretty good.
Well, I'm going to say I don't think you can, I'm not like I'm trumping these places, but I'm looking straight at my machine here. Of course, as I buy from Duluth Trading, of course, and my CNBC thing, I've got a Duluth Trading thing up here. But I mean, I don't think these guys will have anything below 30%. And if I do, as you know, my two nephews, they both take talls. If I wait until maybe I get a 35% one day on December 20th, I'm not getting anything in their size.
Well, tall's different.
Yeah.
And I mean, for that matter, the skinny and fit, which I can't fit into either. I mean, that's a special case, and I'm not in that category, so I can't answer. But I will say this, and again, I bought zero, so I'm not touting or advertising, but at Off Saks, they had like Ralph Lauren polo sweaters, really, really nice, cotton, some cotton mixed with cashmere, $90 for 25.
That's unbelievable.
I'm serious. They had legitimate 50 to 80% off.
Why?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know. But
how do you make any
money?
Even,
I'm not a designer. I'm not a clothes horse or snob or whatever. But, like, there's a very, very upscale brand called Vince. And, I mean, they had sport jackets, you know, $380 for $190. Buy one at half off and get the second one for half plus another half off. I mean, like, literally for seven. You never see that in that kind of a designer brand. Never.
But I'm curious. When I see something like that, I don't think people sell stuff that they lose money at. I mean, if I go, you know, to the Wine Discount Center, who used to sponsor us, so I shouldn't use their names, they don't anymore. But if I go buy a bottle of wine that's a 90 score or 91 score, and it's like $12 and it's from France, I can't help myself, David. I have to go through the math. And I shouldn't. I know it ruins my life. But I'm sitting there going, okay, let me get this straight. These guys probably get the thing. I bet they don't 50% up, but say they're buying it for $8 or $7.50 or something. Now, if somebody is putting this thing in a bottle, the bottle's got to cost $1. The shipment over here from France has got to be $1. So let me get this straight. It costs, you know, $2 for the wine in France? I mean, is that? I mean, I don't know the answer,
but yeah, I mean, there, and maybe it's just, hey, maybe it's sat on the shelf. Some of these designer brands, you know, whatever. Some of them were lighter weight; they look like spring stock rather than, you know, winter stock. Maybe they've just sat there, and hey, we'll take a loss. Just come in, and there are loss leaders in retail.
Right.
I mean, you know, there's stuff. Yeah, I went to Trader Joe's again, didn't buy anything. And I mean, they had, you know, whatever, orange chicken frozen, you know, that's $16 for four. And then right next door, they had center cut filet for $24 a pound at Trader Joe's. So here's a loss leader, yeah, obviously, you know, in the orange chicken. And here's something where, you know, if somebody pays that kind of money, $24 a pound, you know, at Trader Joe's, they're going to make a pile of money.
Well, people, when they had cashmere cotton thing, I got to believe it cost more than $5 to make that thing.
Oh, God, yes.
And so, but even so, you go into even like a
Myers. I couldn't believe it, $25. And I've seen those at outlet stores in Kenosha marked down from 90 to 60. 25.
But you go to the Meijer store, and they got this really nice little butcher area. And then they got the regular meat market. Well, pork is the one that first of all, I like pork, but I mean, and I like to cook it a lot. But the price of pork is down to like damn near zero if you know where to look. But I mean, you can go get a pork loin at the Meijer's, like 10 feet from the butcher spot, and there'll be a special on Sunday morning, $1.60 a pound. Well, God, I'm not a butcher, Dave, but I'm perfectly capable of taking that thing behind the counter, cutting them at 1.5 inches or two, and say thick sliced pork chops, putting them out there, and they're $3.50 a pound. I mean, why do people not realize it's the same thing, just cut?
And that's why I said, you know, I mean, you know, I've followed the futures markets for 40 years, and I mean, cattle's gone from over $1.60 wholesale, you know, the live cattle before the cuts, and you know, there's labor and whatever, to $1.16.
Yeah.
So it's down, you know, almost 30%. And I go into a discount market and I see cuts for between $15 and $24 a pound.
Well, that's
kidding
that's
me?
That's, you know, that it's sort of the theme, and I don't know, Maddie, if you pick up on it, or I'm so clueless when I talk about it. I've never seen a situation in our lifetime, David, where if you were to say there's inflation, anybody who's in the commodity industry, somebody like you cut your teeth on the Board of Trade floor to CME more than I did in the option markets, when you see cattle basically on its ass, live hogs on their ass, oil on
right.
its ass, you would think, what are these morons like me talking about when they're talking about inflation? Yet you talk to, you know, Hal or somebody, you talk to Eric, and he'll say, it's all being absorbed somehow in this management class in the leases or someplace. It doesn't matter. I mean, we've been out to dinner Saturday night, for a couple of people's birthdays. We go to this place on West Randolph, and you couldn't find a bottle of wine on there or a glass of wine for less than $15.
That's
the lease talking, David. It has nothing to do with the wine. They don't.
Yeah, I mean, I like Malbec, and I mean, I know they'll get. There's a Argentinian thing, Catena, and they have a cheaper version, Alamos, and it's $6-$8 a bottle. Now you go to just in a strip. I mean, not even upscale. An Italian place, and it's $12-$14 a glass.
But if you
and in volume, they're paying $5-$6 a bottle.
But if you sit down at the Tripoli some night, and talk to my buddy Al, restaurant Al owns a couple of places, the answer you'll get is, it doesn't matter. If you're putting your fanny in a seat and you're occupying a spot for X, you need to come up with if you give them $50 and you walked in, they'll feed you and drink you for free.
Right.
SB Futures up $29. David, thank you. Maddie, good job as usual. SB Futures up 251. Hopefully we'll stay up here. We'll tell you all about it tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
Hey, guys.
What's up, G?
Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early.
I got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.